Last December, WNYC reporter Alana Casanova Burgess was in Ciales, Puerto Rico, going through a box of food aid that had been delivered to the island.
¿Qué tenemos aquí? Toast and pop-ups, chocolate fudge,
no me.
Green beans, 4 cans, 2 flour tortilla bags, 2 boxes of saltine crackers, 4 cans of loaded potato with bacon progresso rich and hearty soup.
Some of the food was what you'd expect in a disaster relief package, like tortillas and green beans. But the off-brand Pop-Tarts with 17 grams of sugar or the potato soup with more than 30% of your daily recommended sodium intake, those might get you through some tough times, but they probably aren't good for you in the long term. And people took notice. A photo showing a pile of FEMA rations went viral. The food? Cheez-Its, cans of tuna, Baby Ruth candy bars, and Airheads.
There's no one company or three companies that can handle this kind of volume when you get 3 storms coming at you from 6 different directions.
Barry Sendell is the founder and president of Chef Minute Meals, which supplied shelf-stable food to FEMA after Hurricane Maria. He says the need for food aid last fall was way bigger than people in the industry were used to, and that caused people to scramble.
So there were companies, people were just throwing a whole lot of stuff into a box, and they were not being, what I would say, up and up with what they were shipping to FEMA.
Some people were outraged and other people were thankful to have something to eat. So there was some debate about that, but I was particularly concerned given the research that we have there and, you know, the high prevalence of obesity and diabetes and hypertension in this population.
Dr. Uriyoan Colon Ramos is a professor of public health at George Washington University. She went down to Puerto Rico 6 weeks after the hurricane hit, and she says her research found that the food aid given to people after Maria was too salty and too sugary.
So we went there for 10 days to the Federal Distribution Center there, and we saw the foods as they arrived. We were able to open different packages. One of the first things that we would do is take pictures of a package unopened, and then take the pictures of the packages as we were opening them, and then take pictures of the contents of those boxes and the nutritional facts labels of those to be able to document what are the added sugars, if they were listed, sometimes they were not, saturated fat and sodium, total kilocalories, ingredients, etc. And we did that for 10 days, and we found that the majority of the foods that were provided were snacks and sweets, and within the snacks and sweets, 20% were actually those candies and chips. And there were also vegetables, there were dairy, there were fruits, and there were mixed dishes. Mixed dishes are basically pasta dishes like beefaroni, but the majority of those foods were basically snack and sweets followed by those mixed dishes and then fruits.
So someone could say, well, that's not so bad. I mean, these are folks who were in desperate need of food. They have food.
Absolutely. So they had this food, and we also then used these foods to try to make, you know, a meal plan following the federal nutritional guidelines. And what we found is that we could meet just uniquely from the foods received, could meet the amount of grains and the amount of protein that they need to be eating, for example, but they couldn't do so without exceeding the added sugars, sodium, or saturated fat upper limits for a day. So in a way, it just doesn't align. The types of foods just don't align. And I have to say, we did this excluding the very low nutritional value foods. So choosing among the most healthful food options that were provided there. I think we can do a little bit better than that.
Tell us about what average food rations for disaster relief look like. Are they generally full of junk food, or do they tend to be more nutritious, just across the board?
So emergency foods in the international arena have very strict nutritional guidelines that they have to follow, and it's based on micronutrients and caloric need of the population that is being affected. In the United States, I think in terms of what has been provided, we know a little bit less. But, you know, since 1999, we know that emergency foods, as part of any kind of program that delivers foods and that comes through, you know, federal agencies, needs to abide and follow the Dietary Guidelines for American, which are those federal nutritional guidelines. But the logistics might make it very challenging to do that. But we do know that that's at least the guidance that should be there and that they should be following.
And I'm also curious about, I know, you know, there's often people talk about government cheese, for example, but I know that that is a real thing. I mean, the federal government has, for its low-income residents, does have food available, at least in cheese and butter and peanut butter and oatmeal and things like that. Why such a disconnect between what we see in disaster relief versus what we see for often low-income Americans?
I'm not really sure why that is. I certainly have my thoughts about, number one, it could be some logistical challenges in monitoring, but I think that's often quoted as, you know, it's emergency food. This is not a new problem, by the way. I mean, this happens also in food banks. It raises that question, is any food better than nutritionally sound food? And it's a question that can be scientifically answered. If you think that providing comfort through these foods is important, then we need to define what comfort is, what comfort means to the populations that are receiving it, not the populations that are providing it. But it's important to take that into consideration. I think as a researcher in nutrition, the main concern is that these are foods that the government is providing. The government is also saying that we should be following these nutritional guidelines. And on the other hand, there's also the question of like, well, how much does this really contribute to the diet? That was another thing, because the foods may have arrived later, or some people may not have seen it at all. But I think it does send a message when you receive, you know, a box full of M&Ms and potato chips. What is it? And who made this decision? And what does this mean for guidelines? Why is the government providing this and providing some other guidelines that seems almost incongruous?
Are you hopeful that there will be changes, adequate changes made to emergency meals themselves and or the distribution of those meals in the future?
I am hopeful. I know that there is a lot of talk about this in the international arena. They're looking very closely at the issues of nutrition in humanitarian responses internationally. And I think we can learn a lot about what is happening internationally to apply it to the United States. I think historically and traditionally, not just, you know, internationally, but also domestically, we have focused on providing enough water and enough calories and making sure that people don't go hungry, which makes perfect sense, and that is imperative. But now we're seeing that these disasters might continue, you know, on a more frequent basis, maybe more chronically, and the people who will be most affected are the same vulnerable populations that have high risk of diabetes and hypertension and diet-related chronic diseases. And I don't think we're doing a good job at taking that into consideration in the emergency guidelines, not in a practical way. And you see it then when these disasters are happening and you see what people are being provided.
Dr. Uri Joan Colon Ramos is a professor of public health at George Washington University. Doctor, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
We reached out to FEMA for comment. In an email, a spokesperson told us that the meals the agency and its contractors provide, quote, meet the basic requirements recommended by USDA. They added that FEMA has used candy or crackers within its meals as substitute items, but said, quote, these items are used in urgent circumstances when the primary menu component is not immediately available for survivor distribution.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.